let's talk a little bit about your backstory. Two siblings, one good friend from childhood. You referenced her as being your sister already in soul, so to
speak.
She's
like a Kimmy Gibbler.
Yeah. So you formed here in San Antonio. And Nina, am I correct that you were barely in your teens when the groups got started?
I was 13.
Wow. So what prompted you to get together as a musical group as you were already friends?
Fonny and I have been in groups before, and we took a break from music, and then it was just kind of bothering us, like, we need to play. So we started auditioning friends, and we couldn't really find anybody, and Fonny was going to play guitar, I was going to play bass. So then one day, you know, we were out the door, and meanwhile, Nina's, you know, playing with the guitar and stuff. We didn't really know what she was doing exactly, and so we were coming out the door of the patio, and she's like, "You want to hear a song I wrote?" And we said, "Okay, yeah, sure. Hurry up."
Let it go, yeah.
We weren't taking her serious. We were just like, "Come on, what do you got?"
And so she sang the song, and the first reaction was like, "Is that yours?" And she goes, "Yeah, I wrote it." And then the second reaction was like, "Wow, she can sing." Like, you know, and we're like, "Let's, you know, cut looking for anybody else, and let's make her the singer and guitar player." So,
And then Jen made me play drums because we couldn't find a drummer. So she was just like, "We used to jam, so you do it." And I was scared. I was like, "Okay, I guess." And I just kind of learned.
You're scared of everything.
Yeah. And I just kind of learned on stage, like how to play, watching other drummers and stuff.
Was it odd going through your teenage years in the group? I mean, Fonny, were you and Jen like total big sisters to Nina in this regard?
Yeah,
we were mom and dad.
Yeah. Because I dropped out of school junior year, so I got my GED though. I always have to say that. After I did that, my mom pretty much gave them all the responsibility of taking care of me because I was starting to go on the road. There's always those weird moments on, you know, growing up, teenager. I mess up and make lots of mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes and learn lessons. But they didn't give me much of a hard time. I mean, I'm still alive. So.
I'm still living.
I'm still living, and yeah. I have a pretty kind of a clear head on my shoulders.
Not too many scars.
Not too many. A lot of bruises, but not too many scars.
Yeah, a friend of mine and former staff member here at Texas Public Radio described Girl in a Coma's career trajectory as being on a perfect upward mobility chart. I mean, you get to work with Morrissey's producer and guitarist Boz Boer. You're wearing a t-shirt right now from him. An appearance on a Latino TV program leads to your discovery by Joan Jett and being signed on her label, Black Heart Records. It seems like, you know, something out of like a Hollywood movie moment, right? Is this pretty accurate? Did she really sign you on the spot after hearing
you? She did. She came to see us we were rehearsing at a practice space to play at the Knitting Factory in New York later that night. And she liked us when we were rehearsing, and she came to the show. As soon as we were done, we all went downstairs, and right then and there, her and Kenny Laguna offered us to be on Blackheart. And we were of course.
Definitely a dream come true for us. And, you know, I think that's correct. We have been very fortunate for things to just be climbing. Maybe what people don't see is sometimes we'll fall a little bit, but I think that's great because we just get back up and we know what we have to do. But just being signed was the biggest step for us, and
being able to record something officially and then get a real record out, as opposed to us recording with friends and then burning lots of demos on the computer and him hand making them,
which was fun too.
Yeah, it was fun. We had to tour to get this record out, you know.
But I guess coming from, like you said, coming from working with an actual producer, though, can help you learn a lot. When you did those early sessions with Boz Boer, how did he shape your sound, if at all?
I think, if anything, he kind of taught us being technical with stuff. Like, where none of us are trained musicians, none of us know notes. Like, we just play what we feel is right. And
he introduced me to overdubbing things, like second guitars and stuff. Just because I can't play them live doesn't mean I can't add a little spice here and there to some of the songs.
Yeah, it's just stuff like that we're learning and learning chords, like what they're called actually. And stuff
still don't
like
know
that.
What they're called, though.
We're getting there. And then with Boz Boer, we went, it was our first trip overseas. It was our first plane ride, actually. So, you know, there was that experience. And then right when we got off the plane, we took a train. And when we got off the train, Fonny and I had to go to work right away, rhythm section. So we did drums and bass and And that was kind of a first for us, too. So we learned a lot on that first, you know, demo.
Speaking of Boer and Morrissey, Nina, sometimes people have compared you in some ways to a female Morrissey, although your sound's a little different than Morrissey's overall. Do you feel you have a kinship there, maybe lyrically at least, to some of the subjects?
Well, usually anything I listen to at the time, my voice kind of takes its form in a weird way. So in the beginning, I was listening to a lot of Morrissey. So I wouldn't doubt if sometimes I would say certain things like him. But lyric-wise, I don't think I could ever touch his knowledge. He's in his own beautiful world that I hopefully someday I could reach. But as for being called the female Morrissey, that's just a nice compliment.
Morrissey's pretty much embraced his Latino fan base, which is just marvelous, I think. Some people reckon it's because he speaks to the populace, the everyman, the everywoman. Would you agree to something like that?
Yeah, we kind of feel that the Latin community anyway kind of, you know, takes something and idolizes it, like, you know, whether it be Lady of Guadalupe or anything. Just it's a lot of passion. And for Morrissey, he's just... lyrics, there's a lot to relate to, and I think that they embrace it in a different way, and he very much is like an Elvis, you know, like to our community. So I think if anybody, it should be him, because he's interesting.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about him?
Morrissey?
Yeah.
His hair.
Really his hair. I think the whole Latin community just loves his hair. Vocals, just the way
he tells a story.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's telling a story in a song.
It feels like you're reading a really good book when you listen to him.
Right, right.
Well, how about your own local fan base? I mean, you have a terrific local following, and you've got strong support from the women and the gay and lesbian community. Are people getting out the word around the country, the band?
Yeah. I mean, it surprises us everywhere we go now. We're kind of watching our fan base grow and grow. And we're able to touch, you know, whether it be in the Latino community or in the queer community. It's nice. I mean,
and this is where it's like the pros and cons of the internet. And this is definitely a pro. Just, you know, people, word of mouth and, or, you know, texting, Twitter, all that stuff is really a benefit for us.
I must admit that it's really hard to call Girl in a Coma a power punk band, as someone once described to me a few years ago, because especially on the new album on Trio BC, I hear everything from 1980s pop sounds like on In the Day to 1950s ballads that are almost country in their execution, like El Monte, you know, to punk, to you know, a little bit of 50s sound. I mean, you got an Elvis sticker on your bass, Jen, so
you know, loves Elvis.
Yeah, where do you pull from for your own music, all these disparate sources?
It's just different types of thing. I mean, I know I'm influenced by Bjork and Stereolab, Jeff Buckley, Nina Simone. There's like a lot of things, and we each have similar tastes in music, but then we each have our own little difference that makes us who we are.
Yeah, I mean, Jen and I grew up listening to like Riot Girl music, like Bikini Kill, but yet we listened to a lot of 50s, and we listened to a lot of Tejano, and it was just a mix of everything balled into one, which is why we don't want to put ourselves in a genre.
Bonnie's really into Tejano music.
Yeah, she is.
Yes, I am.
Well, the album itself is named for your grandfather's Tejano group.
Right.
You know, what influence did he have on you, musical and otherwise?
It was more so Nina and I grew up. He played guitar. He played drums. He played violin. He would raise his playing around us, just singing his songs, talking about his band. We just enjoyed watching him play. And then, you know, I used to pick up his guitar, and that's how I taught myself. And so he was a big influence in our lives with music. He was very passionate about it too. I mean, he was constantly listening to it, singing along with it.
I guess Fonny was surrounded by him playing more because I was younger. I just his energy and the way he would talk about things towards the end, before he passed, he talked about being in a band, and I guess it's just in our genes and in our blood. Mm-hmm. To play music and to love it.
Yeah Can I ask you about the song that you played in your session earlier, El Monte? It's so full of longing. Where does that song come from?
It comes from experience, and for hopefully, you know, just living life. And I know I wanted to write a cutesy little love song, because I was watching this movie, Punch Drunk Love, and there's this song that came in it, and it was like a Betty Boop type of song, and the girl kept saying over and over, I love you, I love you, I love you. And I was thinking, I want to write something that's kind of like that, like a Marilyn Monroe type of thing. And then I wanted to just write a really great wedding song. So that's it.
It does say it could work that way,
yeah.
I think.
That'd be really cool if someday if somebody's wedding dances to that song. But there was actually.
The ending, I think, is a little.
It's a little demented, like it's a little like you're going to get divorced, but.
Well, let's just do it.
But at least enjoy it for the moment.
In general, where are you drawing your lyrical inspiration, you know, from everyday experiences, as you said? Or?
Recently, this Trail BC is a lot of my own experiences. And a lot of the girls and whoever I'm surrounded by. I know it's different from Both Before I'm Gone. Both Before I'm Gone was me from 13 to 18, so just reading books and stuff. And then this one is more, I guess, going through different stages. So it's this one, I could say, it's more about things I've done.
What led you to record the cover song in Spanish on your new album?
Well, a year and a half ago, we played at, what's it, Ford...
The Ford Anson Theater in Los Angeles, we played a tribute to Mexican 50s and 60s rock. And we were given a CD, you know, of songs we wanted to cover, you know, to pick from. And at first, we heard Bien Cerca, and that one was...
It's really sexy. The original by the Spitfires, it's a really sensual song.
Breathy.
Even the lyrics are about, you know, come closer, and, you know, she's kind of...
Very sexy for 1961.
Yeah, and it's really repetitive too, but it's a cool chill song, and I wanted to keep that repetitiveness of it, and just make it a little more Sonic Youth type. But we had a bunch of songs to pick from, and we covered a lot, and we enjoyed them at the time, and I think we might actually try to learn some of them again because we recently started thinking about them. But that one just stuck with us. It kind of evolved our new change, like for a new style of music we were writing. So it was a great bridge.
Do you like to play covers?
Every now and then. It's nice to...
We usually throw one in during our live shows here and there.
We don't ever want to butcher anything, but we want to show our appreciation for it.
How's it been working with Joan Jett? Has she tipped you about anything in the biz at all? Or
She's great. I mean, every time we see her, it's good energy. And if we have anything to ask her or something we're going through that we're not sure about business-wise, we know we can ask her because she's been through it all.
She's a great support, you know. Yeah. When we play shows together, or she's coming to see us, she's on the side, and we know that she's there. And we play, and then, you know, she'll come up, and she'll say something new every time. And it feels good to know that she's proud of us. And this last show we played, like, she wasn't feeling well. She stomach ache or something. She saw us play, and she ran up to us, and she was like, "You know, I'm inspired. You know, I was feeling, you know, ill, but I'm ready to play after seeing you guys."
Yeah, and that was cool.
We know what she means when she says that because we've seen bands that have been like, "Wow, I want to play now."
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So that's great. And she's been really, really good to us.
Yeah, music has a way to bring you back to life, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
Earlier this spring, Nina and Jim, the two of you, were involved in what is commonly referred to in the press as an altercation with some off-duty police officers at a bar in Houston. And while I'm not particularly interested in the he said, she said about this incident, I am wondering if it's led you to be more cautious or mindful in public at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're still going.
We forget. I mean, yeah, we're learning and stuff, and we've been ourselves, I think, and... I think that's why a lot of our fans like our down-to-earth behavior, which we'll definitely keep, you know.
We like to hang out, you know, when we're done with our gigs, and we don't want to change that. We like to be with our fans. We like to be able to go out with them, invite people out. But we're definitely now having to be, you know, more careful about things that we do. And
I think once a case is over and we're able to talk about it...
we're going to talk about
it. I think everybody will understand and... And I think we'll have something to, usually her songs are like, you know, about her experiences or whatever. Now we might have something politically to say.
I was going to ask if there would be some songs that would come out.
Maybe. If something will come out, I think, for sure, with us, whether it's through, you know, video, art, music, anything. But, you know, we're okay. And I think that's the main thing. And we've got to press forward and we've got a new album.
Is it at all scary to be facing the charges, though?
Yeah, it's always scary, but I think we'll be all right. I'm sure we'll be all right. So.
So it's, and this is not going to affect your touring schedule, hopefully,
oh, no,
or
not
your
at all.
Professional.
Not at all.
We're working
still,
around it.
Yeah.
And it seems there's strong fan support for you because you even have an online legal defense fund being set up. Is that correct?
That's true. Yeah, and, it, and people have helped. And for all those people that helped, thank you very much.
Good. Yeah. Well, and Nina, you mentioned earlier that you dropped out of school to be in the band, but you got your GED, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask it. It sounds like a very hopelessly square question to ask, you know, but about are you going to go back and finish school?
Yeah,
but
yeah. Anyway, I did, like, my mom, you know, just because she always wants to see kids walk the stage, but I wanted to at least do that for her and for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, and eventually I like to go to college, too, just to try it out.
Well, Nina, Fani, and Jen, I really appreciate the time that you spent talking to me today,
thank
playing
you.
The music for us here in the studio. It's a real treat to have you in studio in person.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.